Hello, everybody. This is Lynn Saunders, your host of Cherokee Conversations, and you are listening to MyGraceRadio.com or 102.9 FM, Cherokee County's Christian radio station. Well, if you caught last week's episode, you know that we started with the Declaration of Independence, but not just with the document itself, but going back through several years before the Declaration was even established. We started pretty much at the French Indian War, which triggered a lot of debt for Britain, which caused a lot of taxation for the colonies and much rebellion after that fact. Through several years of tyranny and oppression from Britain, this document was established. To hear that episode, it's a half hour. You can find that on our website on mygraceradio.com, right there on the homepage. And I will leave it there for some time because I'm going to be layering and stacking more of these types of monologue teachings. Today, we're going to start with actual reading of the Declaration of Independence. But before you go too far, don't just turn the button off. Hear me out. Stick with me. We're going to read the Declaration of Independence in sections, sometimes paragraphs, sometimes sentences. And when we can't understand the early English language and how it was written, then I'm going to take a break and we're going to pause and I will have it interpreted to where it's modern day language. It's kind of sort of like if we were going to read our Bible, we sat down with the old King James. And filled with these and thous, it's going to be harder for us to understand what those important concepts are. But with our modern day translations like, NIV or New American Standard or whatever your favorite is today, it helps us to really understand and experience the scriptures in a way that we wouldn't be able to do if we were depending on understanding of old language styles. So that's what I'm going to do today. With this Declaration of Independence. And I'll give a little bit of history throughout just to kind of trigger our memories, but to really understand those years and those tensions from the French Indian War, please do go to the website and just spend a half hour, kind of take notes, and then you'll be ready for this one. Actually, you can listen to this one before you go back there, but it's part of a package. So today we're going to get through the first part of the Declaration of Independence. At the first recording, it was over an hour, and this is a half hour show. So obviously, this reading is going to be put into two parts. Today we're going to get through the preamble, and we're going to get through the first six grievances. Those grievances were to King George most specifically. So if you're not fully remembering the Declaration of Independence, we have the preamble, which is the beginning. We have 27 grievances where our founding fathers itemized all the things that King George had done up to that point that was just taking away the rights of the colonist and had changed drastically the way that the lifestyle was. And then after those 27 specific grievances, then is the actual declaration where they are declaring that they have separated. And so I hope you will tune into this whole half hour and then put it on your calendar too for next weekend when we will finish this series and you'll go, wow, I never remembered this much history, even if you got it or didn't get it from being in school. But it's been fun for me to be able to dig this out and make it understandable for you. Let's dive in. Hopefully, you've got your cup of coffee or you've got your glass of iced tea ready. And please do, if you don't already have it, get a notepad, your pen, your pencil, however you best take notes. This might be interesting. If you've actually got a copy or you want to pull up a copy of the Declaration of Independence on your device to kind of read along with me, that would be awesome. Just go to any of your search engines, put in the, original language of the Declaration of Independence, boom, tap that send, and within a second you'll have that, and we can kind of move along. So I'm just going to go ahead and get started though, and here we go. So, the first part of the preamble, the founding fathers wrote who they were in Congress. This was a big line in the sand when it came to King George, because we are now a unified nation, not a separate 13 colonies, or as they are now referring to themselves, they are now 13 independent states. And now they are coming together to form an organized, unified, nationalized United States. So, here we go. In Congress, July 4th, 1776, the unanimous, that's an important word, unanimous Declaration of the 13 United States of America, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands from which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws and nature of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Okay, so what that means, in the beginning, we understand it when a group of people comes together, when they need to break their political ties with another country. Huge statement saying to King George across the pond, we are no longer going to tolerate or be victimized by you, Britain. You are not going to tolerate your soldiers living in our homes. We are not going to tolerate the taxes. We are not going to tolerate the heavy, heavy occupation of Britain in our business and in our streets. We are not going to tolerate it. We need to break our political ties with you, Britain. And so it's basically saying we want to become that independent nation. And why independence? Because of their biblical belief as God and nature intended. Out of respect for the world opinion, they must clearly state the reasons why they are separating. But to go back to as God and nature intended, this is really what they were trying to do. They were trying to be men and women that God had created on purpose for a purpose for the time in which they lived, for the sanctity of each family, of each colony, but also for this unification of the states. Now, not everybody in the different colonies, if you were talking to the average person, was on board with this declaration. Many were afraid of how Britain might come back and retaliate, and there was some of that. Yes, if you know history, there was some of that. However, this was their way of stating their faith about God, that through their natural Judeo-Christian biblical worldview that they were coming from, that the way that they had been treated by the tyranny of King George in Britain was not as God intended. Then you know your scriptures and you know that what Jesus taught of how we were to live and let our light shine and be the salt of the earth. So when it says decent respect to the opinions of mankind, it requires that they should declare the cause which impel them to the separation. And just to put that in everyday language, it's basically saying they must clearly state why they are separating. They were very, very straightforward. They didn't say, oh, we need to separate. They said, we are. This a line in the sand had been drawn. So to go on with that preamble, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. So this preamble of independence contains that famous introductory text. We hold these truths to be self-evident. In modern day language, to be clearly obvious that everyone is created equal, mankind. Of course, we've come a long way from when this was written. Back in the earliest, the first draft, Jefferson had actually included a clause in there, even stating that slavery should be abolished, and that's very loosely put. He was forced to remove that in this first draft, but as you know, Lincoln made sure that that was abolished in our country. So, everyone, according to the way God created us, we are created equal. If we were to put a scriptural lens to the statement that we are all created equal, let's go to Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female created he them. Because every human carries this image of God, all the people possess equal spiritual and moral worth. That was the absolute belief of these colonists. So that first section was, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. And then it says, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. That means it's just given by God rights that cannot be taken away. This word endowed, it means gifted or granted. So it's really that they are granted, they are gifted by their creator, by our creator God, these certain gifts that cannot be taken away. In fact, James, if we want to keep scripture front and center, James chapter 1, verse 17, it says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights. Let's go back. We're just going to review. I think building on concepts is important to get a whole understanding. So we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These three rights perfectly mirror the foundational biblical values regarding a human existence, life. We know that Scripture views life as sacred and authored by God. If we look and read Psalm 139, 13 through 16, you know this one. For you formed my inward parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you. When I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. So, for liberty, that is spiritual and physical freedom from oppression. This is the central theme of the Bible, from Exodus with Moses when he led the Israelites out of Egypt, all through up to the New Testament when the Jewish people were oppressed by the heavy hand of the Roman government in Jesus's day. Just going through American history of the years before this Declaration of Independence, we can see how the colonists tried to negotiate with Britain. They tried over and over, but they were unable. The pursuit of happiness, that was what they had been trying to do, again, trying to negotiate peacefully, and it just couldn't be done. In the 18th century, happiness meant living a virtuous, blessed, and prosperous life in alignment with God's will. That's also called thriving, by the way. This closely aligns with Galatians chapter 5, verse 1. For freedom Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. And the famous declaration in Leviticus 25:10, it also is inscribed, believe it or not, on the Liberty Bell, proclaim liberty throughout all the land and to all the inhabitants thereof. I mean, there's no way that anyone really going through this carefully like we are can walk away from this document saying, oh no, the Bible had nothing to do with it. All the founders, they were simply using their own wisdom. They were not depending on a higher authority. So far, we know how wrong that is. All right, we're going to continue with the real language that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government. Laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Okay, that's another mouthful. So, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Basically, it's saying governments are created by people, created by people for the people. This concept is also found in the Constitution and in Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. So, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government. Again, this is us, our people, to elect our own officials. If we remember, there was a big cry in the colonies of that day, no taxation without representation. In the colonies before King George III, they lived peacefully, they were autonomous, and now all of a sudden, at every turn, Britain had their heavy hand on them. They had no representation in Britain at all to be able to make or break a case of whether the taxation was a right thing or a wrong thing for the colonists. They had absolutely no representation. And so they had, again, through this document, declared they were separating so they could, going forward, represent themselves. going into that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, we know what that means. That really means when a government starts destroying their rights, then it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute that new government. So when the government, I'm paraphrasing now, so when a government starts destroying these rights, then they have the right to change or destroy that government and build a new one. That keeps them safe and happy. The next section, prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light or transient causes. Prudence, we don't use that word much today, but that means common sense. Long-standing governments shouldn't be changed for minor temporary reasons. And we need to look at that today. Again, we've got a lot of political opinions that are talking about radical changes to our government, radical changes to get rid of our Constitution. If you haven't heard that, it's in the news. Radical changes to eliminate a president, to eliminate the Supreme Court. That just goes against everything. What we're experiencing now in our government is temporary. That comes with the nature of just voting in a president for terms, voting in our Congress for whatever their terms in our local governments. We should not destroy the whole government because we're dissatisfied with a small thing here or there. And what the colonists were living under was no small thing. They had lost liberty. They were losing lives. They were losing their homes. They were losing everything to the British. To go back into the real words, let's see, should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable. What that means is history shows that people will usually prefer to suffer through bad times rather than fix them by destroying the system that they're used to. This was radical. So let's see, disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. To go back, that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism. Okay, what does that all mean? That means that when a government repeatedly abuses its power and its ruler holds absolute, unrestricted, and unchecked control over the people, this is called despotism. It is their right and duty to overthrow that government, to create new protections for their future safety. Okay, now we're into the grievances. These are the 27 things. Now, the first several are against King George, and they seem similar, but there are differences enough based on the colony's history that they were important to articulate separately. The grievances against King George III. Such has been patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. What that really means, this is exactly how the colonies have patiently suffered and why they are now forced to change their government. Makes sense. The history of the present king of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries, usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. What that paragraph means is the history of the current King of Great Britain, King George III, has a record of repeated abuses aimed at establishing total tyranny over us, the colonies, now formed as states. To prove this is back to the original language, to prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. In everyday words, to prove this, let's show the facts to the honest world. First grievance. He, King George, he has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. Basically, he's saying he refuses to approve helpful laws that the public desperately needs. So, to go back into what we learned a little bit last week, the king repeatedly would not look at the legislation that was coming up. He wouldn't even read or accept officially the declarations for negotiations of peace. But when it came to approving, improving the laws for the public good of the colonies, he would just take his time and he would use his royal veto to cancel some of the necessary laws from the colonies, from the assemblies, leaving the colonies without a basic legal framework. And this went on for years. Again, no representation in Britain for our colonies. Number two, he has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. In essence, he stopped his governors from passing urgent laws. He stopped the governors, making them wait for his approval, George, then completely ignored the governors when the governors were trying to appeal. Number three, he has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. What that means. He refused to pass laws for large communities unless they gave up their right to vote and have representation. It terrified the tyrants. What was happening here was as the colonies were expanding and building into new townships, new villages. I mean, we know what expansion looks like. Just look at our county. Every time they clear another bunch of trees, we know that a new neighborhood is coming, a new apartment complex. There's going to be more people. The more people that you have, the more representation you need. And sometimes that creates opportunities for public service for those that you want that local representation. And the king refused any of that. He had blocked immigration. We'll probably get to that a little bit, that he had blocked immigration because people were leaving Britain, truthfully, in Scotland, to come to this new world to get a better life for themselves, more so before this declaration. But, when things were amiable, Britain was losing a lot of wealth and control. So he was putting a stop to it. And so he made it impossible for these new communities, if you will, to have representation, even locally, which the colonists had gotten used to being able to represent themselves. Okay, number four, he called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from their depository of public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. That sounds like a tyrant. He forced government meetings to happen in strange, inconvenient, and faraway places just to tire out the lawmakers so they would agree to his demands. Some of them were elderly, and what he was trying to do was to wear them out. It was General Thomas Gage in Massachusetts who King George made governor. This was the first time, this was 1774, a couple years before the Declaration was written, where one of the colonies had a military government, a military governor, not just a regular governor to seek peace and handle all the things for that colony or for that state, but he was the general who brought in this main military occupation, Boston and all that in Massachusetts. So Governor Thomas Gage was actually the one who had control over this. He moved the colonial assembly to Salem, miles away from their capital of Boston. This kept public records inaccessible, so when they were trying to negotiate legislation on their own behalf, they didn't have computers like we have today to be able to pull up anything at a moment. This also forced the elderly, making them travel in cold circumstances. He was really just trying to break their will. All right, so number five, he has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of people. Basically, this says he repeatedly shut down the local governments for standing up to his violation of human rights. Really, when colonial legislators passed petitions protesting these British taxes, the king ordered royal governors to dissolve those assemblies entirely, locking the doors of colonial capital buildings. Can you imagine somebody going to the capital? Can you imagine anyone going to the capital and locking it up and saying, "You can't meet because we have a government that supersedes your government"? That's a pretty scary thought. The next one, number six, is the original language. He refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected whereby the legislative powers incapable of annihilation have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. Okay, we might understand that a little bit. After he shut down the local governments, King George refused to let new governments be elected, and that was a punishment for rebelling. He also refused to let the people hold elections for their new local governments. This left the colonies without functioning legal systems or courts or police forces for long stretches of time, leaving their communities unprotected. Alrighty, friends, that's all the time we have today. We ended with the sixth grievance to King George III. Next week, we'll pick up with grievance number seven. We'll get through the rest of the grievances. We're going to get through this Declaration of Independence together, I promise. So until next week, God bless you. Bye.